From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
I'm fascinated by the way big food companies develop new foods. Partly that's because it's usually done in secret, but also it's partly because the whole process is just really Sporkful-esque. Like, think about Subway. When they launch a new sandwich, they have to create specs, specifications to tell their workers all over the world exactly how to make the new sandwich. So they have specs for how to fold the meat, what order to layer the fillings in, the correct ratios for all of it. In other words, big food companies do tons of testing to answer the exact kinds of questions that we ask here on The Sporkful all the time. But like I said, it's usually pretty secret. That's why I'm so excited for this show. Today on The Sporkful, we'll get a rare look inside the Campbell Soup test kitchens. What's their research telling them? Is soup actually better in cold weather? Will Ethiopian food someday be as common as Italian? What are the five types of home cooks? Which one am I? Which one are you? Plus, they'll explain how a trendy Korean food truck in LA inspired a product that's now on shelves across the country. Stay tuned. It's going to be fun and interesting. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and today we're going to Campbell's headquarters in Camden, New Jersey, just outside Philadelphia, for a special look inside their test kitchen. But they actually don't have just one test kitchen. They have five. They've identified five different types of home cooks and created a model for each one. So at one end, you've got what they call the uninvolved quick fixer. This person just wants to get out of the kitchen as fast as possible. Then on the other end, you have the passionate kitchen master. This person's got 11 different types of strainers. And there's three more in between. And each kitchen has different appliances and decor, different magazines on the counter, different foods in the cupboard. The idea is that when Campbell's tests new products, they can really understand the specific consumer they're targeting with each one. I started my tour with Jane Fryman, who's the director of Campbell's Consumer Test Kitchen.
We are now standing in the Uninvolved Quick Fixer kitchen.
Uninvolved Quick Fixer.
Fixer kitchen.
So this is a person who doesn't like to cook.
Exactly. They want to get in and out. They are doing it because they have to feed either themselves or their family. So they have no joy in this at all.
These are people who eat to live. They don't live to eat.
Exactly. Exactly. So this kitchen greatly reflects that. You'll see the counters are a little bit more barren. There is a toaster oven. There is a slow cooker. So they will use these things. They do have to make meals for their family.
Or they have to live.
They have to live. So they do need to use those, but it's not anything that they like to do. They have a lot of things in their freezer that are entrees, frozen dinners, ways to get a meal very easily. They do take out a lot.
Is there any hope for this person?
Because
this just seems so sad.
They're happy, they just don't like to cook.
But they make me sad, because I know how much joy they could be experiencing if they would just try a little harder to eat delicious
food. But you know
food.
When they're happy? Well, they're happy when they can get in and out of the kitchen quickly and that they've fed themselves or their family. So they're happy.
Okay, what's the next kitchen?
So now we're standing in a very sort of traditional kitchen where it's all around nurturing the family. They're going to make something that the family will like. So they're not going to make things that have ingredients that they don't know or, you know, it's very traditional sort of foods.
And what's this one called?
This is called the familiar taste pleaser.
I get you. So this is a person who sticks with what they know.
And that their family knows.
Right.
So they have a pretty set group of recipes that they make every day that they feel comfortable with and that they know their family will eat, because it's all around creating memories around the table and having a nice dinner time. So they are busy as well, but they're the type that like to plan. So if you see here on the refrigerator where there's pictures and calendars, there's also a grocery list, a running grocery list. So as they use something up, they're going to put the next item on
there. They're like a well-oiled machine.
Exactly.
But they're not really looking to break out.
No. But they do try new things, but it has to be familiar.
I see. Yeah. So this person has young kids. I see mm-hmm. a drawing on the fridge by Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Do all the familiar taste pleasers, are all their kids named Sullivan?
No.
The next kitchen is the constrained wishful eater. So think about the person that really enjoys food, likes to eat out, wants to experience the food, but doesn't know how to cook all of the things. They might be a little bit younger. So they have a desire to cook, but they don't know how to do it. They also have a lot going on in their lives. They're juggling. They have families. They have small children. They need to do a lot. They work. So there's lots on their plate, but they don't always think and plan around their food.
So what are some of the things that we see in this kitchen that are indicative of this person?
You see the toys here, the magnets. That's to keep the kids occupied while she's cooking.
So this person may have little kids.
Little kids. And so think about making dinner with a lot going on
and a lot of
distractions.
Yeah, I got two kids myself.
So you know, Mm-hmm. You'll see some magazines here that will help them with maybe organizing their life because they have so much going on. They just are juggling a tremendous amount.
Right, but their pile of magazines with the articles about organizing their life is kind of disorganized.
Exactly. Right. If you see over here the mail.
That's why it's wishful.
Exactly. Gotcha. That's why it's wishful. They would like to do more. If they always say, you know, I would love to use a slow cooker, but I forget to use it. You know, it's that planning. They are not planners at all.
So I think that I'm part constrained wishful eater.
Are you?
Well, I got little kids. I'm busy with work a lot. And so, like, I would like to cook at my house more. I don't really follow recipes, partly because I like to just make things up as I go in the kitchen, but partly because it just sort of feels like work. And then I have to go out and get the right ingredients. Or I sort of like the game of what's in the pantry, what can I make with it? But I would like to cook more, and I don't have time.
So I think you might be one of our other cooks.
Okay.
Because you feel very comfortable in the kitchen. You said you don't like to follow a recipe. This person will follow a recipe.
I see.
And will follow it to the T because they don't have the confidence and they don't have the skills.
Right, okay. How does someone graduate from being a constrained wishful eater to being a more advanced, what if I just wanted to break out of this kitchen? I want to get to a different kitchen. What can I do?
So some of it is life stage and some of it is the experience. So of the cooking segments, this segment seems to be the one that can grow into this more confident, passionate cook, which we'll talk about, and I'll show you their kitchen. Because this consumer has a love for food. They like to try new things. So they're experimenting when they're going out to eat.
So this person has potential.
This person has potential.
Okay. So while we were in the constrained wishful eater kitchen, I tasted some Korean barbecue beef. It was made in a slow cooker with one of Campbell's slow cooker sauces. Side note, slow cooker is the generic term. Crock-Pot is a brand name. Anyway, as I got ready to eat, I talked to a couple more people there. Chef Brian Cozy creates new foods for Campbell's, and Michael Goodman takes those new foods and figures out how to sell them. You'll hear Michael first.
One of the things that we learned as we spend a lot of time with consumers is that 83% of U.S. households own a slow cooker, and yet only 2% of dinners are actually made using the slow cooker. So we asked why. Why is that? Especially when you talk to the constrained wishful eater, consumers simply don't know what to do with their slow cooker. They love it. They recognize the value and the convenience and how great the house smells and how easy it is. They simply don't have the recipes, don't know what to do with it. So it sits under the cupboard until maybe once a year at Super Bowl time, it might come out to make a crock pot full of chili for their guests.
Right. It's also my crock pot. I keep it in the box. And it's a big one, and it stays in the box, and so it's also, like, in the garage, usually. Mm-hmm. So, like, I forget that I have it. Like, it's not, like, when I open up the main cupboard where I keep the pots and pans that I use all the time, I never see the slow cooker.
Right.
So I don't have that reminder. All right, Chef Brian, tell me what's going on here.
So we try to develop a line where there are familiar flavors and then exciting flavors as well. So if you see, like, today we're doing Korean barbecue, and then in our line we also have, like, tavern pot roast.
All right, let's dig in here. Okay. Chef Brian's holding my mic for me. It's really good, and you know what I especially like about it? It just proves how great slow cookers are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, like, you just put the meat in there and it's soft and tender. Like, have you considered an ad campaign that uses the term idiot proof? Or do you think that the constrained wishful eaters would not like that?
The constrained wishful eater might be a little bit offended. And we don't think she's an idiot. We just think she doesn't have time.
Right. Do you find that sales differ by region in different seasons? Like, do you sell more Campbell's goods in the dead of winter in the colder areas of the country?
Variance from one part of the country to another is surprisingly less volatile, I would say. We have strong sales in the south, even when the weather is warm, or out west. It just tends to be when consumers get into that winter mindset. It's cold somewhere.
So, I turned on the TV and it was snowing.
That's right. It's snowing up in Maine. So here I am in Phoenix. Right. I should make some soup. Right. That we want that.
Right.
But we do see that consumers tend to break out their crock pots, or they want to make warm, family pleasing oven dishes. Just that rich comfort food that tends to happen more in the fall and winter months for sure.
Oh, man, between this conversation and the recent cold weather here in New York, I'm ready to break out my slow cooker. One thing I love about slow cookers is that they're like the great common ground of eating. There's literally nobody who doesn't like slow cookers. They're like the Willie Nelson of kitchen appliances. And to prove my point, there was a piece in Food & Wine recently where Chef Grant Achatz talked about how much he loves slow cookers. Now, in case you don't know Grant Achatz, he's the chef and owner of Alinea in Chicago. It's one of only 12 restaurants in America with 3 Michelin stars. They have an 18-course tasting menu that costs about $250 a person. It's fancy. I haven't been. But even Grant Achatz has served food at Alinea that's made in a slow cooker. He even takes the ceramic pot right out of the cooker and plunks it down on the dining table. I'm going to start doing that at my house and charging $250 a head. Anyway, I'll link to some of Chef Achatz's slow cooker recipes at Sporkful.com. Coming up, more from the Campbell's Test Kitchen. Did you know they track every menu item in America? From places like Alinea, right down to McDonald's, they want to know what the next big food is going to be. So, we'll find out what the data is telling them. Plus, we'll visit 2 more test kitchens as we seek to answer the question, what kind of kitchen are you? Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. Before we get back to the show, I need to ask for your help with a future episode of The Sporkful. Has your food ever been stolen from an office fridge? Have you ever caught someone red-handed or crumb-handed? Or have you yourself ever taken someone else's food from an office fridge without permission? Have you ever been wrongly accused? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, I really, really want to hear from you. If you're the one who took someone else's food, I'm not judging you. Your name and workplace will be kept confidential. Seriously. But if you've been a victim, witness, or perpetrator of office fridge food theft, please tweet me at TheSporkful or drop me a line, dan@sporkful.com. Now back to the show. If you watch Mad Men, you might remember a classic 50s-era scene from one of the early seasons where Betty Draper throws a very formal dinner party, and she features foods and drinks from around the world.
We're going to take a little trip around the world, starting in Spain with gazpacho, followed by Japan, rumaki, and then we'll stop by Dutchess County for a leg of lamb, mint jelly, accompanied by egg noodles the way my grandmother made them from Germany. And we have a choice of Burgundy from France, or a frosted glass of beer from Holland. Ooh.
Ooh, indeed. That beer from Holland is Heineken. Nowadays, turn on a football game and the Heineken ads are right next to the ads for Bud Light. But back then, Heineken was exotic. So how does a food go from being exotic to everyday? What's ready to make the leap next? Let's pick up my conversation with Chef Brian Cozy and Michael Goodman from Campbell's. Here's Michael.
20 years ago, the Campbell Soup Company would have never launched something like Thai curry chicken or Moroccan spice stew. But what we see is that consumers are being influenced by the changing demographics in America and the influences from, you know, high-end restaurants and chefs and food entertainment, television, and so forth. And so they're becoming a lot more open to trying some of the things that once seemed so foreign to them. And as more and more consumers are willing to try those new flavors, new varieties, that really gives us license to get more creative in our recipes with the expectation that we'll actually be able to make a business out of it. Because at the end of the day, it is a business and we need to sell a lot of the stuff.
Right, right. So, Chef Brian, I see you have a little flyer here, Culinary Trendscape. And right. Where did, like, you have to decide, like, I mean, you have Moroccan spiced stew over there.
Correct.
So why are they doing it now?
What we do is we, like, say for the Korean, you know, we start tracking those trends when they start developing. And what we do is we track it. So say, for instance, when Roy Choi started doing all his Korean barbecue out of a
Koji truck in L.A., right?
Exactly. And so there starts to be a little bit more excitement there talking about it, but it's more niche at that level. And then as we see it developing into Bon Appetit magazines and people start discovering it a little bit more and understanding it. And then that's when we try to bring something to the table and say, you know, here's something that we may want to think about developing against. And if we do it right, it's hitting mainstream and we're launching something when it's right on time.
You know what this makes me think of? It makes me think of that scene in Devil Wears Prada, you know, where Meryl Streep is tearing into Anne Hathaway, and she's basically, you haven't seen
Devil Wears Prada. You got me, but I'm going to roll with you about this one. Yeah,
I actually haven't seen it from beginning to end, but I've seen this one scene replayed like 1,000 times. And basically, so Anne Hathaway is like an intern at this like super fancy fashion magazine, and Meryl Streep is this like high priestess of fashion. But she basically says, the color that I'm going to decide is the cool color right now, this season, is going to end up in this fashion show in 6 months. And then it's going to end up in a magazine in a year. And then it's going to end up in a chain store.
Right.
And that shirt that you're wearing right now, I made that shirt cool 5 years ago. And now everyone's wearing it. And it's kind of the same thing. Like, that's the way trends work. Because you have these people who are, like, super attuned, who are super in these very small but influential areas.
Yep.
They decide this is a cool food truck in L.A. And a food truck in L.A. eventually becomes a recipe on every supermarket shelf in America.
Exactly. And not all of them make it. Not some of them fall off. I mean, we know that that happens, but
so how do you decide? What, are you looking at numbers, or it's just sort of a feel?
So we lean on partners that we partner with, like Technomics and companies like that that track trends as well.
Do you know that there are companies that actually their role is to track every menu item in America? So we actually have access to data around what consumers are ordering in restaurants. And that's some of the information.
Is it all kinds of restaurants, or it's just like Applebee's?
Every
or what?
Kind of restaurant. So we can look from the super high-end premium or trendy places out in L.A. or in New York, right down to Applebee's, Burger King, TGI Fridays, you name it.
And I would think there's probably a real art to getting the timing right of when you launch something like that, because you don't want to seem like you're the last people to the party, but you also don't want to introduce something when people are like, what the hell is this crazy thing? Campbell's went insane.
We find ourselves sometimes launching varieties that are just a little bit ahead of the curve and they fail. And other times we launch varieties that just really hit a nerve. Like one of those really strong varieties that everybody was a little bit leery of, but we went forward with it anyway, was this Thai curry chicken. We took a risk on some of our varieties, and then we also launched more of the traditional varieties, like
shrimp scampi and things people know, right?
Yeah.
But like what is shrimp scampi but an ethnic food from a couple of generations ago?
Exactly. There was a time when going out for Italian was the equivalent of going out for Ethiopian today. Right.
What are some of the trends that you're like, maybe, maybe not?
So we know regional barbecue is huge right now. We wanted to start in the line where people could grasp onto something, you know, simple. They know Southern barbecue and it's sweet, sticky, but you know, it might not be Texas barbecue. So what's to say down the line we might do something that's more regional?
All right, so you could have like a Texas barbecue, you could have a North Carolina
barbecue.
We
could expand that at any time.
Another prediction, Indian food. 10 or 20 years, tikka masala is going to be as ordinary as sloppy joes. That's based on my conversations with the folks at Campbell's and also the fact that there are a lot of Indian people. And their food's delicious. Let's return now to Jane Fryman, director of the Test Kitchen. Don't forget, we still have two more home kitchens to check out. I wonder which one I'll be. All right, Jane, what kitchen are we in now?
So we're going to go to the Passionate Kitchen Master. This consumer loves to cook and loves the process of cooking. It's a real joy for them, a very peaceful time, but they love to create. And you had said you might be one of those consumers.
Yeah, let's see if this kitchen looks familiar to me.
So this kitchen, as you see here,
I don't have this many Le Creuset pots, I can tell you that. No.
Well, but do you have the tools? This kitchen usually has a couple utility jars for their tools.
Oh, see, that's interesting. I'm kind of a minimalist when it comes to gear.
Okay.
Yeah, like I count, let me see here. I see, oh my goodness, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different sizes of strainers.
Different styles. Because you have to have the right one. They love the little gadgets, the little zesters.
Oh, see,
peelers.
I don't have any zesters.
No, you don't.
See, I might be a hybrid.
So here in this kitchen, you'll see this person, when they learn about something, they want to go all in. So they might like coffee. So instead of just having one kind of coffee maker, they have three different kinds of coffee makers. They're doing a French press and, you know, they're doing their espresso and they're grinding their beans. They get inspiration and they'll try things. So they sort of mash up recipes. Is that
that's totally me. Yeah. I mean, oftentimes I follow no recipe, but sometimes if I'm like, oh, I kind of want to do something like this or that, I'll read three or four recipes.
Right.
And then sort of improvise based on the information in those recipes.
Exactly. So let me take you to their pantry. So you'll see here their spice and their vinegars.
It's a turmeric,
wide,
cardamom.
Wide variety.
And just to be clear, Jane, so this passionate kitchen master, this is the person that the constrained wishful eater hopes to become.
Some of the constrained wishful eaters do hope and aspire to become a passionate kitchen master because they do love food and they want to learn and they're very open to it.
And let's face it, what's the one obstacle? Their kids, right? I have kids, so I can say it, right?
Yes. And
when their kids get older...
It's not the same.
Recently, it was a cold day, and I called my mom to say hello. Her and my dad are at home, and they're cooking. They're cooking all day in the kitchen. They're chopping vegetables, and they have the radio on. And I'm like, I cannot wait to be old. God, it's going to be so great.
Well, but yes, so your parents probably are passionate kitchen masters.
Yeah, my mom's got several strainers.
Oh, yeah. See, you do know.
Yeah.
You do know.
Yeah. Okay, what's next?
So why don't we go into the disciplined health manager kitchen? This person is concerned about their health. They do enjoy cooking, but if you notice here, we have a no-fat fryer.
The George Foreman grill.
Exactly.
But you got some higher-end appliances in here. You got a nice-looking grater and a strainer, and there's a...
And this is a pressure cooker.
A pressure cooker oven.
They have the vitamins. They'll have a juicer or a blender to make smoothies.
So I feel like this, the healthy kitchen here and the passionate kitchen master kitchen, they're like, it's like the same people before and after the health scare.
They're right? Very similar because the passionate kitchen master does not have that nod to health. So they are very similar, but they are a little bit different in how they approach it.
Jane, final question. What kind of kitchen are you?
I'm a passionate kitchen master.
Uh-huh.
I love to cook and the joy of cooking, so that's my natural area.
So come on now. I am like part constrained wishful eater, part passionate kitchen master. When you go to friends' houses and you see their kitchen setups and you see the way they cook, do you like classify them?
I don't classify them. I ask them lots of questions.
Like what?
Always. Tell me what your favorite tool is now. How did you make this? What issues did you have when you made it? You know, where did you find the recipe? Constantly asking them questions.
You're always doing research.
I'm always doing research. I'm always doing research.
All right, Jane, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I got to tell you, I'm so curious to hear from you eaters out there to find out what kind of kitchen you think you are. So we set up a poll at sporkful.com. We'll also share it through Facebook and Twitter. To recap, here are the five types of home cooks. If you don't like to cook, but you do it anyway because you have to stay alive, you're an uninvolved quick fixer. If you stick with a set of reliable dishes that you make well, that you know your family will like, you're a familiar taste pleaser. If you're super busy with life and you want to cook, but you don't have the time or the expertise, you're a constrained, wishful eater. If your top priority at just about every meal is to eat healthy, you're a disciplined health manager. And if you love to cook and experiment in the kitchen and you got multiple strainers, you're a passionate kitchen master. So, what kind of kitchen are you? Take our poll at Sporkful.com. Also, we have photos of the test kitchens there on our site and links to some great slow cooker recipes from Chef Grant Achatz and others. All that is at Sporkful.com. And quick reminder, if you've been a victim, witness, or perpetrator of office fridge food theft, I really want to hear from you. If you took someone else's food, I will protect your identity. This is journalism, okay? Maybe you were falsely accused. Whatever your role was, please tweet me at TheSporkful or drop me an email, dan@sporkful.com. Next week on the show, a Mormon listener calls in to ask for help pairing non-alcoholic drinks with food. So I travel to the world-famous Galco's Soda Pop stop in Los Angeles to help him. And let me tell you, I have never met anyone in my life as passionate about soda as the owner, John Neese.
Mr. Cucumber became the soda of the year.
And it according started to who?
Here. According to Beverage World Magazine, 2010. It started here. And the first lady tried to goes, oh, this isn't what I was expecting at all. It's actually good.
That's next week. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani. Our web writers are Talia Ralph and Alight Trong. Special thanks to Chris Bannett. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.